Welcome to Grant. You're listening to Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. Here are your hosts, Nathan and Felipe.
Welcome back, one and all, to another edition of Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. I'm your host, Nathan Jendrick, here with Felipe Delgado. And Felipe, we will just leave the ASU football discussion out of this one, because that wasn't so pretty. And hey, did you catch Ryan Lochte on game day this Saturday?
I did. That was depressing, but yeah, I did.
I don't know, man. Like, we get on here, and week after week, we defend Ryan, and we talk about the great opportunities. But that, I don't know if we can really defend that.
You can try all you want to, but it is what it is, and I'm sure Auburn appreciated his support. And I, you know, for those of you that may not know what we're talking about, Ryan Lochte, over the weekend, he was on a program on ESPN called Game Day, and it's pretty much it's sports talk, it's football talk before the college football games get going. It's early in the morning, and Ryan was on there, and I know if in the YouTube world, all you really have to do is go on the YouTube and put in Ryan Lochte Game Day, and you'll see what we're talking about. But there was a question about who would win Louisiana State versus Texas A&M, and Ryan picked Auburn. So it was an uncomfortable moment, I'm sure, for the broadcasters and sportscasters.
But they handled it like champs.
No.
I mean, they, you know, consummate professionals
right
there. Those
guys are professionals. They handled it. They handled it like professionals and moved forward and didn't make Ryan feel like he didn't know what he was talking about.
Yeah. But see, and that's those kind of guys are hosts that we can kind of aspire to, Felipe. Because I got a feeling if up on that stage would have been Felipe Delgado, Nathan Jendrick, and Ryan Lochte, you and I would have looked at each other and then back at Ryan and said, "What did you just say?"
Just completely made our guests feel like an ass.
Well, it wouldn't even be because we wanted to. We'd have just been so caught off guard, and you know our hosting style, I think, lends more to discussing the issue at hand. And when that issue like that presents itself, well, boy, we'd have to take advantage of that.
No, you know, they did great. They kind of figured, hey, maybe he doesn't know what we're talking about, so we're just going to move forward. We're going to hit him up with something else or help him out a little bit. So, and they did. They helped him out. They did well. But I'm sure it's in the Twitter universe and Facebook and YouTube for sure, because I'm looking at, you know, the YouTube threads right now, and you know every individual who owns a YouTube account uploaded this, so
yeah.
So it seems like a lot of people saw it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's like I had written a column about this. You know, Ryan's a great guy, but not all publicity is good publicity, and we've talked about that. And this is not a bit of publicity that is going to do swimming any favors. It's not like it's going to be a death knell and people are going to think, oh, wow, all swimmers are like this, I'm not going to pay attention. It's not like that. But, again, it's not something that did the sport any favors when it comes to creating characters in the personality department. And that's not to say that Ryan can't fill that void, because I think he's got great potential to do that just because of the wide breadth of talent that he has. But perhaps in the future we could keep him off of game day, or we could give him a teleprompter at the least.
Not just because of Florida ties doesn't mean he knows anything about football, which is the case. Unless he maybe you know what? He was on game day. Maybe the night before he went out, had a few pops, came in, wasn't functioning on all cylinders, and got caught off guard. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say it was an isolated mistake, and I'm sure he'd do just fine the next time he's on there. Maybe do his homework a little bit before he steps on stage.
Had a few pops. I like that. I like that a lot. Okay, so that aside,
yep,
we can catch up on the World Cup. This is something that obviously this show has been quite the fan of, and we've been following each week as we bring you Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio. And no surprise whatsoever, Katinka Hasu still banking the big bucks. She is now officially surpassed the total of the 2011 overall winner, and she's getting up there toward about 50,000 at this point. I don't know the exact count, but quite the paycheck for that young lady right there. And something I'm particularly pleased to report, Anthony Irvin, Felipe, a friend of yours, Anthony Irvin set an American record that wasn't an American record, but was an American record, and I'm going to let you explain exactly how that shook out.
It's a kind of, sort of, but not really, but it will stand.
Exactly.
What Anthony Irvin did was he broke the current textile best American record. So how to best explain this? The American record in 2009, I believe it was 2009, you can correct me if I am wrong, but in 2009 the American record was set by Nathan Adrian at 20.71 in one of the World Cup meets. But it was done, however, it was done in one of the spacesuits that used to be worn, one of the nice shiny suits. So they decided to not accept that because I believe in January of 2009 they stopped accepting the records that were being broken in those suits. So Nathan Adrian, although it does still stand as the fastest American, it's not recognized as an American record. His time was 20.71, which I believe sooner or later it's no longer going to be a topic of discussion because Anthony just seems to be getting stronger with every one of these World Cups. So he did break the previous American record, which was held by Josh Schneider. I think it was 20.99. And he ended up going 20.85. So he is now stands as the new American record holder. And I stand corrected. I apologize. Josh Schneider actually in Dubai in 2010 went 20.88. So regardless, Anthony broke at 20.85. It now stands as the new American record in the 50 short course meters freestyle. Nathan Adrian is still the fastest American, if that makes any sense, at 20.71. But like I said, as Anthony goes, as the World Cup progresses, it seems like he's getting a little bit faster each time. So that might not be a subject or a topic of discussion any further as the meets progress, because it seems like Anthony is on track to take Nathan, his good friend Nathan Adrian's record down as well.
Yeah, that was a heck of a swim, and I was glad to see it. And that was an interesting rule that USA Swimming had put into place a couple of years back, but it makes sense when you break it down. They banned domestic use of tech suits at a certain point.
Yep.
And they said, hey, it doesn't matter that you can go to another country and swim legally in these under FINA rules and in their federation. Fact is, in the United States, we're banning these things. Records aren't going to count here, and they're not going to count abroad as an American record. And I know some people had a lot of issue with that. Some people thought, well, hey, if it's legal for the rest of the world, it should be counting as an American record. But if you think about it, that doesn't fly in any other aspect of life. You know, there's a lot of things that you can legally do in other countries that you can't legally do in the United States, and the United States isn't going to applaud you for it just because you can go somewhere else and do it. So, I think it makes sense. It was unfortunate at the time for Nathan Adrian, but I agree. It's probably not going to be much of an issue in the future. And by that, I mean near future, because I think Anthony Irvin's going to be able to get that. But also of note, that win pushed Anthony Irvin's earnings from the World Cup up to just over $10,000. So, you know, here we have a guy who, before the World Cup started, was coming up with some pretty cool offers and a pretty neat way of raising money to support himself through the World Cup. He reached his goal and exceeded his goal, as far as I understand, on his Indiegogo support site, where people were out there sending him money, but donations basically. They're making purchases of custom songs and stickers and T-shirts and all that kind of cool stuff. And now here he is. He's also out-earned in prize money the amount that he was hoping to raise just to go on this World Cup tour. So good for Anthony. Great to see this. He's doing fantastic, and clearly, as he goes, he's getting faster. So I think we're gonna see some more good stuff. But that brings us to an interesting topic that
Nathan, I think. And so. If I can interrupt for a second, I want to correct myself. Earlier, I said it was January of 2009 that the United States had put that rule in place.
It was October, but
it was October of 2009. They did it after that point. So. I just wanted to correct myself, just make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Yeah, it was from the 2009 World Champion, World Short Course Champs, which was toward the end of the year, and the U.S. put the tech suit ban as far as records go and all that on October 1st. So there you go. Felipe has a clean conscience now.
Yes.
You know, check
and didn't mislead the three people that follow us. My mom, your mom, and my dad.
There you go. So, yeah, my wife doesn't even listen. Not really. That's good. You know, she hangs out and as we record, and she gets to hear it all live, so good for her. But, that brings up an interesting point and an interesting training method. And I know we have a lot of coaches that listen to the show that find discussion on training more interesting than kind of the TMZ swimming type stuff that we talk about, which usually centers around Ryan Lochte. Go figure. But anyway, at championship meets every year, you have all the swimmers that are competing there having tapered for this event. So they want to swim faster, so they taper down. Some athletes, they taper for 2 weeks. Some athletes, 3 weeks. Some athletes have coaches that have extremely long, intricate tapers that last a month. And it varies from person to person. And you can have perhaps others who do even less, but I'd say standard would be a couple of weeks. Now, this is a great idea because this is what swimmers have always done. But here we have events like the World Cup where we have world records nearly being broken. We have American records being set. And we got Anthony Irvin, guys like him, who are traveling the world, which, as anybody knows, can be an exhausting experience. The food that you're eating, it's always hit or miss when you travel, even in the best times. Body's not used to it. Sleep gets messed up. Time zones change. Training certainly is its own demon when you're trying to compete for prize money. And yet, they still manage to get faster. So, Felipe, you've been amongst the best. You've trained with the best. You've competed at the Olympic Games. Is this taper thing a bit of a myth, or are we overblowing this taper idea? Because here we have guys like Anthony Irvin who come out of training, start competing, keep competing, and not only are they not getting worn down, he's going faster every time he swims.
You know, I think there's something we said about being on a circuit like this. It's almost like an NBA season, or it's almost like some of the other professional leagues where the NBA players, although they do train between games, they don't get an opportunity to really train how they would in preseason, where they're just really focusing on training. And then once they get into game, they get into what's called game shape, and then they're just maintaining is all they're pretty much doing. Well, if Anthony in between or any of the other competitors that are at the World Cup are able to just, if anything, maintain in between World Cups or in between competition, it gives them an opportunity to really, as they're maintaining, I would think that they're also recovering from the base that they've been accumulating over the past few months in getting ready for these meets. So, yes, as they're recovering from that, they're getting a little bit faster. I don't know if there's something to be said. I don't know if you could say at this point Anthony can go and, you know, quote-unquote rest for 2 weeks and get any faster than he's going now. I don't know if he could or not. But I think that as an overall average, I would take this, what they're doing now, I would take this as that nice natural progression versus putting all your eggs in one basket, going to one swimming and not doing well. You've seen it. We've seen it a lot. I think Mark Gangloff did as well, where he went to Olympic trials, put all of his eggs in one basket, didn't swim as well as he wanted to, went to a meet a week or two later, and went close to his best time, if not his best time. You can correct me on that. You may know his times a little bit better than I do. But it's pretty much the same thing that we're looking at now. You know, if you go to one World Cup and you don't do well, you may go to the next and do better, then the next and do better and better and better, and pretty soon you're going your best times. All I think it is that you're recovering from the workload of the workouts that you did for the past month or two and getting ready for the season.
Well, do you think that these tapers that elite athletes use that last 2-3 weeks or more, do you think that those are actually necessary to swim the best? Because we've seen athletes who perhaps for their tapered meet will drop a second or so in 100, but we have athletes now on the World Cup Tour who are going best times by a second or so, and they came straight out of training to start competing.
Well, I think most swimmers will know that there is workout shape and then there's swim meet shape. Just like in other sports, there's workout shape and then there's game shape. There's two completely different things, and I think the more you subject your body to swim meets, the more in swim meet shape you become. Nothing is clearer than, let's say, the college swim season. I remember that when I was starting my college swim season, I wouldn't be going as fast as I was towards the end of the season. Why? Because I think I competed more, there was more exposure to it, and my body got used to racing. And the more I raced, the faster I swam. Of course, there were some hiccups, there were some ups and downs throughout that, but overall, I did swim faster. So is there something to be said about the 2 to 3 week taper? I think there is, but I think what happens is so much of an emphasis is put on resting and not enough emphasis is put on the fact that you have to maintain your competition shape. You have to continue to race during that taper season. And I think that's where a lot is missed in taper. And that's what we see some swimmers that will go to the meet and they feel great, they've tapered, they feel rested, but they just don't have that edge because they haven't been putting enough emphasis on that. I have the good fortune of living just a few miles away from Jason Lezak, and we would train together every so often as he was getting ready for 2012. And one of the things that Jason does is he'll pick certain days throughout the month where he says, hey, strap your suit on, put your suit on. He'll ask some of the other swimmers who train with us to put a suit on, and we get up and we race. Now, he is considerably faster than us, so how do we do that? I'll race a 50, we'll have somebody else race the second 50, and that's how we race. But Jason's pulling 49s in workout, long course meters. So he's pulling 49.2, 49.3, and what he tells us is he does it because that keeps him sharp and that keeps him in race shape. And it's good. He needs a little bit of recovery time, sure. But he does it because he knows he needs it. So if you're not able to get out to the meets, that's something that should be during your taper period. That's something that should be considered is you still have to get up on the block and go fast. And I think there are coaches who get that, but there are coaches who may not put enough emphasis on that as well.
So, Felipe, when you were getting ready for the Olympic Games, give us the general outline of what a taper for you looked like.
Well, I had coaches who were what I felt and I still feel I had for 1996, I had Ernie McGlisco, who, as far as I'm concerned, scientifically based, he is the best coach on the face of the earth at this moment. He has done so much research and he did everything that he knew to do to get me ready for swimming. I remember I was coming off one of the best years of my swimming career. 1996 was great for me as far as college goes. I did well in college. I did well at the NCAAs. So what we tried to do is we tried to mimic what we did as far as tapering for NCAAs. What we did is we did use some time between 2 to 3 weeks to rest, and we did pick a couple of days during that time period where we got up and we did some racing. For me, I don't like to use the Olympics because I didn't do particularly well at the Olympic Games, but for me, I think more than anything, what ate me up at the Olympics was just a little bit of the nerves and the butterflies and all of that and being on a big stage. Not necessarily that I could have gone better or slower or whatnot. That might have just been the best I had on that particular day. But I came close to my best times, and sometimes at those meets, because they're such high-level meets, coming close to your best time or just achieving your best time is a feat in and of itself. So that was one. 2000, I swam with Mike Bottom. I think with Coach Bottom, I think in that particular instance, because I had switched my training, I had switched over to him in June of 2012, and the Olympics were in October of 2012, that summer. I think what happened was, or September, I apologize. I think what happened was the exposure to his workouts and not having enough rest to back it up, I think that may have been what caused me to not swim as well as I would have wanted to. But Coach Bottom is one of those coaches that he just speed by recovery. I think that's his motto, where the more you recover, the more speed you develop. But I think in our situation at that particular time, I just hadn't trained with him enough to know my body well enough to know that I needed more time to recover from his type of training. We were training 6 to 7 hours a day, and swimming the 50 and the 100 freestyle, you would think you don't need to train that much, but because we were doing so many different activities throughout the day, that's what it amounted to. So I just think I needed more rest in that point. But both coaches were the same. You need to rest to recover, to gain your speed and your fast twitch muscle, but you also need to stay sharp by getting up and swimming 2 or 3 or 4 times and trying to go top speed. So those were my two experiences in 96 and 2000.
You know, there's an interesting facet to tapering that I've seen a lot of athletes talk about if they don't swim up to their expectations or up to their coach's expectations. And a lot of athletes, they come out and say, well, I over-tapered. And it's interesting to me that that happens because you're still, when you think of these athletes who are swimming, still a few thousand meters a day. And yeah, it gets broken down, particularly towards the end. But when you're still swimming such yardage, and if you are doing race sets and things like that during practice, it's hard to think, wow, you know, over tapered, that's unfortunate. Because you talk about getting speed from resting, and you're still able to certainly get through those workouts and race during workouts. But then when the day comes, you have over tapered and perhaps over rested, and those muscle fibers, those fast twitch fibers, just don't want to fire the way that you need to. That's interesting. And I don't envy a coach. And Felipe, you talk about some of the best coaches this world has seen. And I don't envy any coach who has to try to keep track of a whole team's taper. I mean, that's I can't imagine how difficult that is. You know, I coach mostly individually, you know, and even when I was a high school coach, we'd have, you know, X number of swimmers make our district meet, and then I'd have X number of swimmers that I'd be coaching at state. And as the numbers progress and get smaller, it's easier to keep track of. And then obviously for Olympic trials, I have one swimmer, and those are easy things to keep track of. But, I mean, coaching a team like the race club, for instance, I couldn't even fathom trying to keep track of that many tapers. But here's a question in that sense for you, Felipe. Because, you know, a great coach is made up of many things and many talents. But do you think that in a sport like swimming, where there's so many little nuances and each athlete's so different, not just physiologically but also psychologically, do you think that this sport, as far as times go, would be further progressed than we are right now if we took more of a track and field approach and swimmers worked not individually but in much, much smaller groups with their coaches than we see right now when it's generally one big squad and one coach?
Well, I'll tell you why swimming takes this approach, and I can talk to you about the elite level. Maybe at the elite level, if there was some sort of sponsorship, or if there was somebody that was financially maintaining your facility or financially maintaining your athletes, I think it's a different level. At that point, you can pick and choose who you train with. And there's no better example than the race club. Mike Bottom was able to get away with training a dozen athletes at the race club and use an entire facility because the facility was being financially maintained by another organization. That makes it really easy for a coach to work, or much easier than the coach who has to pack in 300-400 swimmers on a swim team because they have to maintain their own facility. The difference between track and field and swimming is that a pool is much more expensive to maintain than the track is. So it gives the track coach an opportunity to be able to train individual athletes or a smaller group without having to worry about the overhead that comes with taking care of an aquatic facility. Where the swim coach, from an early age, from the age group level, a swim coach is having to battle the financial demons and having to fill up the pool as much as possible, having to take in as many swimmers as he can just to break even in some cases, or make a small profit in other cases, while paying everyone out wages that are fair to what they should be making. So yeah, I think if the playing fields, if we were on the equal playing fields, I think swimming would have the same opportunity. But since we're not, I think it's apples and oranges at this point because of the overhead cost that comes with an aquatic facility.
Right, yeah, and that's something that I don't know. I don't know when or if that is something that can ever be overcome, because I know in areas like here in Western Washington, and certainly in climates where it gets much colder in the winter, you have your heating bill alone for a pool facility is much more than the yearly upkeep for a track or a field of a variety of sorts for other sports. So it's difficult, but I do think that it's something that, should we ever be able to reach that time in which that's feasible for swimming, I think we'd see a lot better performances out of swimmers. I just think that we are people like to say, well, swimmers, people haven't been swimming nearly as long as they've been running. So, you know, of course, you know, we're not going to quite have as much advancement when we haven't been doing it as long. And there's something to that. But at the same time, when you just don't get the same same training opportunities as another sport, certainly your progression is going to come at a much slower pace. Now, there will come a day, I think, when we max out human potential and we won't see people getting seconds faster at a time, and we'll be celebrating world records by a hundredth of a second. But I think people will be reaching those because they have closer relationships with their coaches, better understandings, and back to our original premise here, better understandings of their taper. So that's, you know, it's an interesting topic. I'd like to see what other people have to say about that, coaches and swimmers alike, past and present. Give us your taper stories and let us know what you think, because I have you know, just individually talked to swimmers over the years who have talked about, oh, yeah, you know, I could swim just as fast after resting for a few days as I could 3 weeks, so I may as well get the extra training time. Well, that's cool, but was that a one-off, a two-off, or was it is it indicative of something that we could be taking advantage as a whole in the sport? So if you guys have comments on that out there, by all means, go to swimmingworldmagazine.com, find the show link, and leave us your comments. So, Felipe, other things in the news, just bits of headlines here, and this one's kind of neat for our listeners who haven't seen it. Gary Hall Sr., going to be the new president of the U.S. Olympians Association. Three-time Olympian, three-time medalist, flag bearer, and now he is the head coach of the race club that we just discussed down there in Florida. Can you think of anybody better with the resume that Gary Sr.'s got? Can you think of anybody better for this position?
Me. The only person that comes to mind is myself. But since I didn't run for it, and since I was never a U.S. Olympian, and since I never got any medals, I was a flag bearer, so I got him there. I mean, we were equal at that point. I carried the flag, Ecuador's flag, into Olympic Stadium. He carried the American flag into Olympic Stadium. But since it's not going to be me, absolutely not. There's nobody else I could consider than Dr. Hall. And Dr. Hall has been a huge part of my swimming background as well. When I swam at Arizona State, you know, I swam with Gary, not only on the Phoenix Swim Club during the summers, but I also swam with I also had the opportunity to swim with Mike Bottom during the summer of 2000, getting ready for the 2000 Olympic Games on the race club. So Dr. Hall was a big part of what made the race club tick. And now I know that he's doing his thing down in the Florida Keys at Isla Mirada. He's got the race club. He's doing camps. He's doing clinics. So he's doing his thing down there. So no, congratulations to Dr. Hall and the entire Hall family. And I'm sure he's going to do just an amazing job because he's a born leader. I mean, the guy is a leader. So he's gonna do just as well with this as he's done with everything else in his career.
Yeah, no doubt. And, I mean, he just comes from a fantastic lineage of athletes as it is. I mean, it's just when you hear that Hall name, you just know, you expect great things. And previously he'd been a vice president, and there is a panel of, I think it's seven vice presidents, and he had been amongst them through in the past, and now he will be the president leading up to the Rio de Janeiro Games, I believe it is. I don't know exactly what their terms are, but I know that he's going to be there through 2016. So certainly congratulations to Gary Sr., and we expect that U.S. Olympian Association is in wonderful hands. So, again, congrats to him. Now, Felipe, we move on to another recent headline that lots of facets come off of this. The headline, as it read on Swimming World, Missy Franklin to don the blue and gold next year at Berkeley, the one of, or if not the most talked about and prized swimmer from the 2012 London Games, has decided that she's going to commit to Cal and swim under Terry McKeever. And I think, Felipe, if you use some logic here, the Olympics turned out pretty well for her. Terry was there. I'm not saying that there's any recruiting that went on, because I don't think it's necessary when you have that great of a meet and that's the coach that's on the pool deck for you. I think it just builds good, warm, wonderful feelings, and I don't think it's a big surprise to see her over there at Cal now.
It's not a big surprise, but you have to remember Dave Saylor was also at the Olympic Games, also part of Team USA, and also the head coach at USC. So there, I'm sure there was a war there to try to get Missy to come onto the USC campus as well and at least get a glimpse at what life at USC could have been like for her. But it seems like her mind was made up. So the recruiting staff, Terry McKeever, the swim team, Cal itself, unbelievable job. You have an unbelievable swimmer coming to your team, and you just got a lot better.
You know, I think if she were allowed to swim all the events, Missy Franklin could probably win most collegiate dual meets on her own.
Yeah, that's always cool to have an athlete like that on your team.
Yeah.
It makes your job a lot easier, and I think Terry McKeever may be able to sleep a little bit easier tonight.
Yeah, now the interesting part here is she had visited, according to reports, she had visited Georgia, she had visited Texas, and of course she visited Cal. She made the decision without visiting USC. Now, I never went on any collegiate recruiting trips. I mean, when I was graduating high school, I hardly knew how to swim at that point, so I certainly wasn't being recruited for any sports, let alone swimming. But Felipe, when you're, as an athlete who's deciding what college they want to go to, usually you would think that you'd want to take advantage of, just to make sure you're making the right decision, you would think that you'd take advantage of all the opportunities to visit campuses. She didn't go visit USC. Do you have any inclination or any perception, guesses, on why she would have passed up a trip that sounds like she originally had planned to make?
My opinion is that Cal must have put on such a great show and must have been so convincing in their approach that Missy decided, hey, you know what, Dave Salo, I respect you enough to say, hey, let's not waste our time here. I've made up my decision. I've made up my mind, and this is where I'm going, and this is what I'm going to do. So, you know what, I'm going to guess that her mind may have been leaning towards Cal, and once she went there and saw the team and the atmosphere and the coaches and the college campus and college life, she decided, you know what, this is where I want to be, and this is where I'm going to be. So that's where she's going to be. And like I said, Cal just became a lot faster, a lot stronger. And Cal also has a great leader on their team as well.
No doubt about that. No doubt whatsoever. Now, the interesting part about this, and something that I think many listeners will find interesting, is that it has been reported in the piece on SwimmingWorldMagazine.com that Missy has apparently let people know that she is going to swim collegiately for 2 years, and then after 2015 NCAAs, she's going to go pro in order to take advantage of the lead-in and, of course, being at, presumably, the Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games. Now, this is interesting. I know that we've had athletes like Jessica Hardy, for example, come to mind, who swim collegiately and then go pro in the middle. But as far as I know, no other athlete has really said that right from the get-go, that was the plan. Now, for Missy to come out and do that, one, I think it's very good in that you're not going to have any hard feelings from your teammates. Think, oh, you know, we're doing great, we're building, now you're leaving us. You're letting them know right off the bat, hey, this is the plan, no matter how well or how, you know, we do or don't do, this is my plan. So, I mean, I think this is good, but correct me if I'm wrong, this is pretty unique, isn't it?
It is pretty unique. I don't think there's a lot of swimmers that have the opportunity to do that. Most of the swimmers that we hear of are usually coming in throughout their college careers or post-grad. These swimmers have the opportunity to make that decision prior to even joining their college team, which is kind of cool, I think. I think it might be a trend, and it might be something that for future classes, it might be something that we maybe look at other athletes. But let's take into consideration the athlete that we're talking about and, you know, the amount of scrutiny that she's taken for pro. So I think she's looking at the best of she's going to have the opportunity to turn pro, and she's also going to have the opportunity to make a little bit of money. Or I'm sorry, she's going to have the opportunity to swim in college, but also the opportunity to make a little bit of money in 2016.
Yeah, you know, it's athletes these days, it's certainly not an enviable position when it comes down to scrutiny, like you talk about. You get athletes who, if they take endorsement deals and get away from college, people are like, oh, you're selling out, you know, should have gone to college, or, yada, yada, yada. But if you don't take the money, then people are like, well, why aren't you taking the money? So it's people are going to complain one way or the other, and you certainly have to do what's best for you. And I think clearly that's what Missy's doing. She's turned down a significant amount of money in order to achieve her dream of swimming on a college team. And I think you have to admire that. And of course, for her, you have to ignore the naysayers and the people who just want to try to bring you down no matter what. Because one, of course, it's not important. And two, it's just nonsensical because, again, you're going to have people complain no matter what you do. So good for Missy. And hopefully the economic climate will be better when she turns pro than it was now. But I mean, Felipe, I don't think that we could even put a dollar amount on it. But if it's estimated that she's missed out on $4, $5, $6 million now, I mean, and this isn't a bad economy. Could you imagine what she could potentially be making if corporations had extra money to actually throw around and spend?
You know, she's stuck to her decision, and you have to respect her for that. And I know that there is a monetary value to the decisions that she made. She has lost a considerable amount of money, but I'm not so sure it's money that's been lost. I think it's an experience that's going to be gained from being able to swim in college. With her personality, you can tell she's somebody that's really going to take advantage of this opportunity, whether it's 2 years or 4 years. And I think she's young enough where she has so many years ahead of her that we won't even consider the money that she's lost now. We'll consider the money she's gaining in 2 years or 4 years. Because I see her continuing to get stronger. I think she's just scratched the surface. And with whatever comes throughout her college career, she could end up being one of the most decorated college athletes in the history of the sport. And she could be, she still has the opportunity to be one of the most decorated Olympians in history. So remember, Michael Phelps at his first Olympic Games did not walk away with any medals. She walked away with five. So I think, you know, comparing the two, she's already ahead of him as far as how many medals she has won to date.
Yeah, and that's also an interesting storyline. People talk about the total number of medals that Michael Phelps has, but they don't keep in mind that in one of his Olympic Games, he walked away with no medals. Right. So had he even added a couple there, the record that he has now as far as total medals go would have just been more astronomical. So the question becomes, getting an early start, Missy Franklin walks away with quite the haul the first time out. If she goes to three more Olympics, do you think that she could break the total medal count that Michael Phelps has just set?
Because of her versatility and because of the number of sport of events she swims, absolutely she has that opportunity. She is the female version of Michael Phelps, and maybe a better version of Michael Phelps, simply because she started earlier. She has five more medals than he had at this point in his career. And, you know, she has the same opportunities in that she is not just isolated to one stroke or a couple of events. She swims a plethora of events, and she can swim on all of the relays. So she has just as much of an opportunity as Michael did of winning as many medals as he's won and more because of the start that she's gotten with her first Olympic Games. So that'll be interesting to see. I'll be interested to see how she does throughout her college career and leading into 2016. I'm excited. She's so young. She's a strong swimmer. She's a prototype swimmer. I mean, 6 foot tall. She's got big feet. She's got big hands. I think she's got a long way to go, and it'll be exciting to keep up with her.
So do you see her, in your opinion, winning 8 medals next time around?
In my opinion, I didn't see Michael Phelps winning 8 gold medals.
Well, I'm not saying gold. No, that's different. We're talking total medal count here.
Absolutely. Does she have the opportunity to do it? Absolutely. Because if you discount 3 medals that are practically, you know, historically speaking, practically a given, which are the 3 relays that she could possibly be on, then she has 5 individual events that she could possibly swim. She does have 5 events that she could very easily swim at the Olympic Games. So, yeah. Is there a good chance that she could win 8 medals? Absolutely, there's a good chance she could win. Do I see her winning 8 medals? I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes.
And not just the whether or not, even if she doesn't get eight, if she gets seven or whatnot, remember, if she goes to the same number of Olympics that Phelps did, she doesn't have to win eight and seven because she's already got five now. So that can space out a little bit and make up for perhaps if she only, and I say that with all sarcasm available, if she only wins, say, six medals, well, she's got a little padding room now, and she can certainly get that medal count, which is amazing to me because for Phelps to get it, you see guys like Bob Costas on NBC. They in the same segment, will talk about the amazing talent that is Missy Franklin, and then they'll talk about Michael Phelps, the legend, his new medal count record, and how and what he expects will never be broken, or at least not in our lifetimes. And yet, I think, in that same segment, he was probably talking about the athlete who most likely could do it.
Right.
So, it's it's interesting, and I think it keeps things interesting. It keeps fans watching. And unfortunately, it's an Olympic medal count, so it doesn't do much for us in between Olympic years. But at least it's something to keep an eye on, and every 4 years it is something that people are going to follow. That said, as we all know, there needs to be a lot more done to keep swimming in the spotlight in between the 4 years, and I don't mean appearances on shows like Game Day. Oh, was that too much? Never mind.
No.
But at the same time, we have to remember, too, that there are always athletes who are deemed the next Phelps, or before Phelps did his stuff, it was the next Mark Spitz, the next Jetty Thompson, the next Eric Torres, all these kind of things. And more often than not, athletes don't match up to their expectations. And I think it's unfair to these athletes because you can have athletes like Katie Hoff is a great example. And we've had her coach, Paul Yetter, here on Off the Wall, and he'd previously been on my previous show. And Paul is one of my absolute favorite people in the sport, and he has done a fantastic job. But I think when expectations get placed on athletes like Katie, when it was, she came out in the Olympics and it was, oh, she's going to be the next Phelps. And there was so much pressure placed on her that I don't think in the end, when the things don't materialize, that takes away from the praise that athletes like Katie and coaches like Paul should have gotten. So instead of, wow, look at this fantastic job that you've done. You've got this athlete to the Olympics, and you're coaching at these major meets, the biggest meets in the world, and winning medals. Well, instead of that, it's, oh, well, she didn't get 8 gold medals. And I think it's unfair. And I hope that doesn't happen. We can always hope it doesn't happen again. But and in this particular topic, I certainly hope it doesn't happen to Missy, because now if she goes to Rio de Janeiro and wins 4 medals, even if they're all gold, I just know you're going to see headlines. People go, well, she fails to match medal count from London, or, the opportunity to match Phelps is in the distance, and that kind of thing. And it's just so much negativity that can be placed around things that should be so positive. And, we can hope that we don't see that. And you never know. Athletes could just decide, Missy could decide after Rio that she doesn't want to swim anymore. She'd be like, you know what? Moving on. Got the money that I need to live the life the way I want to do it, and there are other things out there for me. And she's certainly a smart and talented kid, and I think that she's got lots of doors open for her, both in swimming and outside of swimming as we go. So certainly, of course, going to keep an eye on that. And I certainly don't know that this show is going to be on the air 4 Olympics from now, but if it is, we will obviously be covering that right here on the air.
You never know.
Yeah, I know. It's crazier things have happened. I mean, soap operas, they've managed to be on the television for what, 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
So if they can do it, Felipe, we can do it.
You got it, buddy.
Right on. So, all right, one last topic before we get our producers here pull the plug. Detroit. And yes, that means Detroit, Michigan. Possibly a world champs host, says the headline on swimmingworldmagazine.com. And the article discusses that Detroit's interested in being a joint host of an upcoming short course world championships, and they put in a bid to put on the meet with the city of Windsor in Canada. So it was interesting, and apparently there was a rumor out that they were going to put together a joint bid for a world championship of the long course format, but they did not do that. And instead, they decided to do this joint bid for a short course meet. Apparently, the United Arab Emirates and Hong Kong have also made bids. But I thought this was interesting, Felipe. Not exactly a place that you think of as a swimming hotbed or a just venue for major meets or competitions of really most kind. But interesting all the same in a joint bid with a city in another country. So something I thought was interesting, but is it practical?
As long as General Motors becomes a title sponsor, absolutely anything's possible. You know, I would love to see what an opportunity the city of Detroit, you know, with Windsor, they decide to come on board. General Motors throws their, you know, financial backing or their corporate sponsorship. They make it a blowout meet. I mean, it's just one of the greatest and most organized meets to go to. They've got the financial backing. There's no stress at all. Wouldn't that be great? Doesn't that sound like the ultimate progression for United States swimming?
Well, what I think, what's interesting is the economic impact that it could have.
And it could have a nice positive economic impact. So I think that tax dollars help resurrect General Motors, and I think General Motors should pay back the world of swimming for that.
Yeah, so but you know, the rest of the non-swimming folks out there may be a little upset that bailout dollars are going toward a swim meet. But no, in all seriousness, what's interesting about this is that you get a place like Detroit, which has just suffered so much lately with their economic situation the way it is. But I think they realize the value that this sport that we all love has to cities that that cater to it. I mean, look at Omaha, Nebraska. They realize what kind of good stuff swimming brings to their community as far as tax dollars and just revenue of a variety of types, whether it be city services and just local economic impact for local businesses. It's impressive, and I think that this really goes to show that people are taking notice. And maybe, you know, maybe it's somebody in the city management office in Detroit. They're just a swimmer, and they thought, hey, this would be cool. Let's put this together. But I doubt it. I really think it speaks more to the fact that people are realizing that there's value in swimming. And I think this goes a long way. We talked last week about bringing meets like the World Cup and bigger brand name meets and competitions to this sport and taking advantage of those things. And you have to have a site willing to do it. And I think when you get a city who is in need of just a real uplift when it comes to the economy, and they're out there putting themselves, opening the doors and making offers and bids for swim meets, I think that says a lot about what our sport does for communities.
Seems like our sport's going in the right direction, and that is what we need, and we need more of that, where if you put a bid out, people aren't shying away from it, but they're fighting to try to get that bid, and they're fighting to showcase their cities. And you're right, Omaha, I mean, you know, the fact that 2016 trials will not be in Omaha, I think Omaha, that was a hit, because you know, they have state facilities benefited from having the swimming community down on them every 4 years. You know, they have the World Series of baseball, of college baseball, that go there every year, and I think they were getting used to the fact that swimming was also, you know, showing up every 4 years. And economically, I think it was a huge impact on Omaha, and it's going to have the same effect on whatever city, which I think it's North Carolina, I think, is the state, or who gets it next? Is it Charlotte, maybe, who gets 2016?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't think they've announced yet. There was a rumor that it might have been Charlotte, but whoever gets 2016, I think, understands the economic impact that it may possibly have on their city and their state. So I think it's great. I think it's finally – swimming is finally flexing its muscle, and it's really helping out, so it's good.
Absolutely, no doubt about it. So anyway, that's all we have for today. We've covered a wide variety of topics, but that's what we enjoy doing most on this show. So we thank you so much for joining us. Join us again next week right here on Off the Wall on Swimming World Radio.